Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 109 of the Open Paddock Podcast. Sean joining you as I always do with the partner in crime, Mike W. How are you, Mike?
Good evening. Doing well.
Yeah, doing well, doing well. So, finally back after a 1 week hiatus. It was a bit of an unplanned hiatus, unfortunately. Yeah, so we're here and we're going to go ahead and motor through the show and get some things. We're going to talk, obviously, some IndyCar news, some other news from around the world of motorsport, including the WRC Rally Spain happened this weekend, and we had that knife-edge title fight going on. We'll see how that has shaken out heading into GB, and then we will talk a little bit about Formula One because we had a race. Not this past weekend, but the weekend before, and some good stuff happened there. So we'll get into that. But before we do anything, we will mildly address some of the issues that happened with a couple weeks ago. Not to belabor the point. If you're new to Open Paddock, you may not know this in regards to what happened. It is the policy of our site. And our older listeners know this as well, that we will not post videos of accidents in which fatalities occur. So just in case you're new to the site and you were not aware of that, that is why we did not post videos of the Dan Weldon crash at Las Vegas. It's not what we do. We will not post an accident footage until we know that the driver is going to survive and will not die. I mean, once they're out of the woods for life-threatening injuries or anything, then we will post it. But other than that, if somebody is killed, we will not post it. I think it's kind of people like ESPN and some of the national outlets a little bit tasteless by constantly showing it over and over again. We at this site will not do that. And if you must see the crash footage or, of any accident from here on out, hopefully, God forbid, no more fatalities. But dealing with the business that we are in, if you must see fatal accidents, you can direct yourself to YouTube because we will not post them. So, I think.
Now that said, what we deal in here at the website is opinion-driven snark, and what we do is very opinion-based. And that's by design, because you can go anywhere and get the news. We're more about giving you our spin and our ideas on the on what's going on from our own personal standpoints. given that it just wasn't appropriate for us to do a show last week. It's a little raw, a little fresh in all of our minds still, and honestly, I was pretty devastated by it. As were, I'm sure you and Doug as well.
Oh yeah, we were really upset about it. And that's one of the things as well. Doug put it on our Facebook page, and he put it really well. We are not professional journalists. We are simply fans who try to do the best we can to put together shows and articles expressing our opinions. Oftentimes, people don't agree, and oftentimes, some people do agree. I mean, a little 50-50. It's all where you fall in the perspective. But we did not post any memorial stories either, not because we didn't care or because we weren't upset, but it was really because neither myself nor Mike or Doug could really put our feelings into words. And as Doug said on the Facebook, if you can't understand our silence, then there's no way that you would understand our words.
That's a good way of putting it.
So, I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. We're not we were very upset, very devastated, especially as we were got to be a little bit closer to the Brian Herta outfit at Indy. We have obviously a couple friends down there and and all, and it was a great time that month, and it was unbelievable when he won the 500, and it was really upsetting for me and Doug, as it was for Mike. So we weren't doing it out of disrespect; rather, we were just doing it out of respect, so we didn't do it wrong. Because Dan Weldon was somebody who, did not deserve to have somebody do it wrong for him. He was an fantastic person, along as being a race car driver, but more as a person than anything else. So we felt that the best way to honor him would be just say nothing and direct you to some of the other awesome tributes that were wrote by some of our blogging colleagues and some of the national outlets as well. So thought that was the best course of action for that. So, well, I guess that being said, we can kind of segue into the IndyCar segment here. And I really don't know how to segue into it. And I don't really honestly know what to say about it. So, Mike, if you want to, I don't know if you've done any better of a job preparing for it than I, but.
I think the operative thing that has to be said is Dan was 33. He lived an interesting life as far as IndyCar goes. When he came into the series in, 2002, brash, rude, made a lot of enemies early on. And it didn't take long, though, for his talent to really show through. And as far as IndyCar accomplishments, he had 16 wins, two at Indy. The rest of them were all on ovals, except he did win the inaugural St. Pete IndyCar race. There's no denying the guy had significant amount of talent, especially at Indy.
Raw speed.
Yeah, and that was just it. I mean, he came in, he looked a lot like Thomas Schechter, but his career didn't go the way Thomas Schechter's did. Because he learned from his mistakes. That was uncalled for. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think it's just he kind of curtailed his driving style to not repeat mistakes like that. Whereas Schechter, he has one. Schechter's style is he has one style, and that's fast. As fast as he can go. On the dirty line, he doesn't care, as he calls it, riding dirty. He did not really adjust that. He just went fast and did a hell of a job going fast. Whereas Weldon realized that if he wanted to make a career out of IndyCar, he was going to have to adjust some of the mistakes that he was making. Like he wanted to, because as everybody has said, it's well noted, he was very passionate about the sport of IndyCar and he wanted to do it for a long time. One of those things where you have to realize, you know, you have to learn from these mistakes if you want to drive, you know, at the top with the top teams, those being Penske or Ganassi or at the time when he came into the series, Andretti. Definitely have to fix that because team owners don't have any time for you to continuously wad equipment or anything like that. So,
yeah, it's a sad statement, but he was going back to Andretti next year. It has been announced that he had signed a contract for going back. It's a multi-year contract with taking Danica's place in the GoDaddy car. And
there was, with that deal being signed, there was more victories to come from him.
I would agree.
If not potentially even championships, I would say, because of his ability. He was one of those guys who could take a car, as he obviously showed at Indy this year. He can take a car that has no business necessarily being at the front of the field, and he can generate that raw speed. I mean, he along with, you know, the Schmidt engineers helped obviously at Indy. Brian Herta is no slouch when it comes to racing. But at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, especially in spec cars like these, it really has a lot to do with who you put in the car too. And, you know, Weldon brought out the most. Jackie Stewart always says it takes an artistic touch to get the most out of any, racing machine. And Weldon had that touch where he could get the most out of any car that he was driving, whether it be the Panther car, the Herta car, the Ganassi car. He was able to find speed where others couldn't.
Well, the repercussions certainly are going to be felt for a long time, and there's going to be discussion about this for a long time, and we're not going to get into that.
Yeah, we're not professionals in the realm of safety or anything of that nature, so we're not even going to speculate.
But Dallara has chosen to name the 2012 chassis in Dan's honor. Very fitting. I mean, you know, yeah. It was pointed out many times during this whole ordeal that Dan was testing the 2012 car for Dallara. And it's those very safety innovations that he was testing that he would have benefited from in this incident. We shall see the type of contact that launched Dan, you know, up into the catch fence. Some of it was wheel on wheel, and we'll see if the new structure around the rear wheels on the Dallara will keep that from happening. I being that they're carbon fiber, I can't see it taking that much energy, but we'll see. Brought out a lot of interesting comments from a lot of different people. You know, we got Jimmy Johnson spouting about ovals and how he doesn't think that they should run on NASCAR type ovals. And you know, Will Power has been pretty vocal in all of this as well. And he's very clear that he didn't want to be racing on that track. You know, Robin Miller has been saying for years that they shouldn't be running on those tracks. He said on many occasions he's afraid of getting a car into the stands. And, you know, very much been vocal against the style of pack racing where there's no differentiation in speed. And that was definitely one of the contributing factors to this was, you know, you had 34 cars all packed together on the track, and it was 11 laps in, so they weren't strung out all that much, and there was just nowhere to go, which, you know, caused for the calamity that we saw. So it's going to be in, you know, IndyCar's court, IndyCar and other organizations. I'm sure that ACUS is going to be involved in it, and everyone else. You know, ACUS is the underwriting organization, and they're going to have to be, they're going to have to continue to agree that IndyCar is doing a safe thing.
Yeah, and it's really tough because I think on these ovals, I think if you take an oval like Las Vegas, you know, never mind. I'm not even going to try, but what I will say is that I thought that given the situation, I don't think that there necessarily needs to be a step back from oval racing. Obviously, many people are fans of open wheel racing on ovals. There's a very vocal minority of people who, you know, will absolutely not watch the sport if ovals are not involved, you know, to about the same degree of road courses. A lot of people don't like road and street courses because they think it's boring. I think that's kind of a misinformed statement. I think that the road and street course racing this year has been mucho better than it has been in the past, in terms of competitiveness and everything. But at the same point, you know, American open wheel racing has raced on ovals. We need to find a way. If we can send a man on the moon for crying out loud, we can find a way to make these cars even more safe, because there is no such thing as a perfectly safe racing car.
It doesn't matter what kind of track you're on.
Yeah. I mean, look at Toronto when Krasnov crashed and had that, you know, he was killed in Toronto along with that track marshal, and we nearly had a death this year in, what was it, Baltimore, when Kanaan went freaking, you know, I mean, that dude's lucky to be alive. I mean, he went absolutely careening into that runoff area, and it was any wonder he didn't. You know, obviously, it may have been a different story had Helio not been there to stop him, or at least break some of that fall. But, I mean, you know, you cannot, at the end of the day, what needs to happen, I think, and this is all I'm going to say about it, is we need to find a way to get away from pack racing. You can race at those speeds on an oval, but you have to find a way to break the cars out. If that means one team dominates, so be it. I would rather see Dario Franchitti or Will Power win every single oval race and be strung out than I would seeing, you know, 34 cars grouped together and not able to break away from each other. I mean, not even Franchitti and Power could break away from the pack. I mean, I think the only guy who successfully escaped the pack was Tony Kanaan, and he started pole position.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just one of those things where we have to find – one, obviously have to make the cars a bit safer, and we'll see how far the 2012 car and Dan's efforts have gone to doing that. And I think that it'll be very good. But we also need to find a way to get the cars to fan out just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because you cannot run wheel to wheel like they were at 225 miles an hour. I mean, one simple little mistake that any driver could make could cause an accident like that.
Yeah, the it's been interesting listening to a lot of the drivers and past drivers talk about what they felt were the big dangers in this style of racing, and all of them. Almost to a man, all of them point to the fact that you've got these giant packs of cars, and when there's a wreck, there's just no way to react. There's not enough time to react to it, especially given the speeds they're going and how close they are together. So a lot of them have been, Mario Andretti's one of them, pointing back, you know, we need to give the cars more horsepower and much less downforce, and mm-hmm. just, you know, let them drive it in the corner and have to brake and have to manage the car in a way that they currently don't have to. And again, that's been something that people have been saying for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that the new car is so far along in its development, I don't see that being a new design philosophy for the car, unless it was already designed in that way. But there aren't any I don't see any indications that the new car was designed, you know, over revving on horsepower and mm-hmm. Much less downforce. They just moved the downforce is what they did to the under tray. So
yeah, I think. Well, one of the things that needs to be looked at here is this event, like you said earlier, is going to have far-reaching implications, rather, the mm-hmm. mixing words there, far-reaching implications, because now we have both Dario Franchitti, who won the championship, at that race, as tragic as it is, and as much as we should not be celebrating a championship, and we're not, but he won the title. And Will Power also, both drivers are seriously close to potentially walking away from the sport. Franchitti said that he's contemplating retirement out of the IndyCar series. And, I mean, honestly, what else does he have to prove?
Yeah.
And, he's done it all. And even Will Power has come out and said that he's not sure if he wants to, you know, compete in IndyCar anymore. Given the ovals. So there's even talks about him, even talks of him potentially having a go at Formula One or something. I mean, I don't know, you know, who he's been in contact with or if he's contacted anybody about a ride, but definitely through the Racer magazine, Will Power's father has actually said that he wouldn't mind seeing him go do Formula One or some other form of road and street racing because he just doesn't like the fact of him running on ovals. And so this is going to be interesting, we'll say, because we have also Jody Scheckter coming out and saying that he wants Thomas to quit. I mean, you know, a lot of this accident has a lot of people really thinking.
Yeah,
and for IndyCar, they're asking the wrong questions for IndyCar's benefit, because if they lose drivers like Franchitti and Power or Kanaan, I mean, those are huge fan draws, obviously.
Now you look at guys like Franchitti and Kanaan, and obviously Dan was the upstart that came and joined their team. Mm-hmm. When Michael quit racing, Dan Weldon came in with hardly any. Dan tested, or he ran a couple of races for Panther the year before Michael retired.
Mm-hmm.
Michael retired, and Dan took Michael Andretti's car. The young upstart comes into this team, and to this day, we haven't seen a closer driver pairing than Franchitti and Weldon and Kanaan and Herta.
Mm-hmm.
Those were fantastic times for that team. Obviously, those guys cared a great deal for each other as friends and co-workers and what have you. And you could definitely tell that those were the guys that were the most torn up. Mm-hmm. By this event, and if Kanaan walks away, if Franchitti walks away, I wouldn't be too surprised. Sam Schmidt came out and he said, "I don't know if I can do this anymore."
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, those are reactions that are really close to the heat of this moment, but it certainly makes you reevaluate your priorities.
Yeah, well, one of the things Tony Kanaan actually has said, and I apologize for misinforming, but Kanaan says that he will continue racing. So we will at least have TK, but Franchitti is contemplating retirement, as is Will Power is talking about separating from the series as well. So we'll see what happens. We'll definitely see what happens going forward. And you're right, that was a very close-knit team, a very dominant team. But all those drivers became very good friends, kind of the IndyCar rat pack, if you will, with Andretti, you know, kind of as the Piper with Kanaan and Franchitti and Weldon and all of them. So, you know, it was good times for the team, and the last time that Andretti was really any kind of a force in IndyCar, to be honest. So
yeah, back in the good old days of that Toyota engine that just, the Honda engine that just dominated everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, shall we move on and talk about some of the other little tidbits of news?
Yeah, might as well.
All right.
Might as well.
Well, the Flying Coxman, or a.k.a. the Naked Guy on a Unicycle, was replaced for this year's championship, which, as we mentioned before, Franchitti won. And it was the Aster Challenge Cup.
Yeah, the Aster Challenge Cup is a racing trophy from ages gone by. Let's see if I can dig up the originally awarded... Boy, when was this? 1915. It has been sitting. It was awarded like 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
For the
Never mind.
Yeah, I can't even remember what kind of race it was. It was a race that was 250-some miles. Anyway, the cup is beautiful. It's mm-hmm. It's a silver cup with a nice embossed relief of the nice roadster on it. Very beautiful piece of art that's been sitting in the dregs of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Museum, just waiting for an opportunity to be used. They've put a nice base on it that it's a dark granite base that will include all past winners of the American Open Wheel Series, and that's under all sanctions, whether it's AAA, IndyCar, CART, IRL, USAC. Every winner of a national Open Wheel Championship is represented on that cup. Pretty fantastic. Pretty nice piece of hardware, and it's good that they're getting rid of that rather embarrassing piece of art that they had before.
For the Las Vegas race, just some couple statistics, really pointless statistics at the end of the day, but it noted that 80,000 tickets were handed out for the Vegas race, which about 20,000 people-ish showed up to the track. From what I heard on the ground anyways from folks that were out there enjoying the race, it was pretty full. A lot of stuff said sold out and everything. Obviously, the turn three and four, the turn three and four stands were not open. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there was no way that you were going to pack a full house in there. But yeah. That being said, you know, kind of gave out a lot of tickets. Not a lot of people, comparatively speaking, showed up. But from everything I heard, it was pretty good. It was a pretty good turnout at the end of the day. I don't know what it all means. I don't really know the specific numbers or what it means at all, and honestly I don't think it really matters, because I think that as far as having that event back on the schedule, which is naturally something that you think of when you think of ticket sales and the whole lot, you know, is you know, it was I don't think that ticket sales really at the end of the day have much to do with if that event will be back or not. So
yeah, I think in the end it's going to be very unlikely that event comes back next year, even though they've signed contracts and everything. I wouldn't be surprised if that was kept off the schedule next year.
Yeah. And so also looking, and I may have to come back to it, or actually, I'll just go. By the way, I seen a picture of Dario Franchitti today after the drivers' meeting where they were all talking, mm-hmm. You know, about things that had happened. And, yeah, it was fantastic. He has a fantastic vintage Indianapolis Motor Speedway baseball hat. one that I would like to say that I would like to get a hold of. So if Mr. Franchitti ever listens to us, which I doubt it, if you put that on the Dan Weldon Memorial Auction that started roughly sometime today, I would gladly bid on it. So I'm just saying. And also, just to try to lighten it a little bit here, Ashley Judd actually said that she was – that. Dario was going to get a slight haircut and wanted to know if anybody not it was just a trim, she said. She assured us that it was just a trim. but she said that, you know, would anybody bid on his hair on the memorial auction? And given previous discussions that we've had on this show, I actually answered yes, I would. I don't know how I would display it, but I would actually bid on.
I think there'd be more people lining up to bid to be the one that got to cut the hair.
Nice. See, now I don't want any part of that, because I don't want to mess up the coolest dude in auto racing. I don't want
with
to do that.
Full military cut.
Oh, he already had that when he went to NASCAR, and he looked absolutely atrocious. I'm sorry. I'm a huge Franchitti fan. Please don't block me on the Twitter. But you can never cut your hair like that again, because you have that old school 60s race car driver hairdo that everybody wants to have, and you pull it off so well. And if I could just even buy, you know, if I could just buy a piece of the coolest hairdo in auto racing, I find myself saying that yes, I would bid. So Ashley, put it on there. I will bid for it. I don't know how I'll display it, but I'll bid. I might actually tape it to my diecast. Wouldn't that be cool? So when I walked up to get him to autograph it, I'd say, "Here, Mr. Franchitti, please sign your last Indy 500 winning car. Oh, and never mind that. That is actually your hair taped to the side of the box."
And I have this little doll I made of you.
Oh, jeez. I meant to bring it, but I left it home on my Franchitti shrine in my closet.
Nice.
Well, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, for Doug's sake, there was an Indy Lights race that happened. And there was some not-so-nice things that happened. Victor Carbone had set pole position for the race, and then Joseph Newgarden came and was going to win the race, and then something happened. Oh, I can't recall. I'm trying to skim through as quickly as I can. but something happened. There was some kind of move that occurred in which Newgarden's tire was cut down, and Newgarden lost the race, and Carbone actually took first place. So, there you have it. I mean, I'm sorry Doug would do a much better job, if he was here, but he's at work. But I did my due diligence, and I said that Victor Carbone won the race. So, yay. And that's the end of pretty much the IndyCar season, on that note. Wish we had happier circumstances to talk about it, but please keep...
Way to end the year.
Yeah, tell me about it. Tell me about it. Actually, it took me 6 days to actually shed tears. I was really numb to the whole thing, and then Saturday night, I started thinking about it, and I actually got upset about it. So that was the first time. And it's really one of those weird things, because like I was telling you before the show, I deal with that kind of stuff, not necessarily race car deaths, but I deal with death all the time. And so I was naturally, just numb to it. But I will say this in closing, and this has some importance. I have never been more upset for somebody who I didn't know personally on a personal level. I had the same emotions for Dan Weldon and his tragic death as I would one of my, I had the same emotions as when one of my friends from high school, one of my good friends from high school was actually killed in Iraq by an IED. And that was right as I was joining the service at the time. And I had the same feelings and the same gutted, empty feeling for when Weldon, it was announced that he had perished as I did that day. Because, when you work in, even as we do, not even professionals, but as bloggers, we still get to 3 or 4 races a year. And we're in the paddock, we're talking to these people, we're talking to the teams, not necessarily all the drivers. And anytime I ever talked with Dan, he was always, very nice and everything, but I just never got to know him on a personal level, never interviewed him, never did anything like that. But because it's such a close-knit family in IndyCar, when it was announced that he had, perished in the accident, I had the exact same feelings as I did for some people in the military that I had known as well, who had been killed doing what they were very good at and what they loved to do. That's how close it hit home to me, I guess, if I can try to explain it. I don't know if I did it myself any favors, but just trying to relate to everybody, it was a big deal for me. And it just took me a while to really finally express emotion over it, because it was just unbelievable. I couldn't believe it, literally. So, but that's all I have, I suppose. But, anything else that you would like to add?
Nothing that I really want to talk about.
Okay. Well, that's great that we can finally. Please stay with Open Paddock throughout the off season. We will continue to cover the IndyCar series. Many blogs are going on winter vacation, and I honestly don't blame them this year of any year to go on a winter break. But we will still be covering IndyCar in the off season as we have since we began the website. So if you need, tell your friends. Tell your family if they need motorsport news in the off season, please, come on over. We'll try our best to put up stuff in the off season for IndyCar and try to keep up. I don't think we'll post too many things in regards to investigations or anything involving the accident. But we will keep you up to date if there are any design changes to the 2012 car in wake of, or we will keep you up to date on any kind of scheduling changes that come about as well. So keep it with us, openpaddock.net, and we will keep you up to date in the off season as far as the IZOD IndyCar series and IndyCar as a governing body as whole. Try to maybe get a couple interviews in there as well. Maybe try to do an interview series in the off season with some drivers, some team owners or something like that. So, but As far as tonight, that's all we have. And moving from one tragic story to another, we here at Open Paddock do not cover MotoGP because we. I know that Doug is an avid fan of MotoGP. I, too, am a fan. I'm not as avid as him, but I do watch the Grand Prix. Mike, I don't know to what extent you watch Moto.
Nope.
But I am a fan of it. I have great respect for the men who climb onto those, 200-mile-an-hour monsters and ride around those road courses. Much respect. And it's with great regret that we mentioned that this weekend Marco Simoncelli, who was a rookie this year and honestly a world-class talent, was also killed in a racing accident. So there you go. You've got two in 2 weeks. Simoncelli was killed after suffering multiple injuries to his head, chest, and pretty much everything. I mean, I'm not going to explain it in detail what happened, but you should just know that, there was an accident early on in the Malaysian Grand Prix in Sepang. He came off the bike and was then suffered fatal injuries after his fall. I'm telling you from just what I've watched, Simoncelli was an aggressive driver, much like Weldon, very brash, very aggressive. But he was doing like Weldon did, and was actually suiting his driving style to not making those same mistakes and not being as brash as he was early on in the season. He was really putting together some good finishes this year, really coming alive in the second half of the season, and he ditched his Honda in turn 11 pretty much right after the race had started. So it was a rough week as well for MotoGP. And I guess much respect to the family, condolences to the family of Marco Simoncelli and all of the MotoGP paddock, as they're a great group of people, a very close-knit family as well. We always joked, me and Doug, about his sideshow bob hair, because if you've ever seen Simoncelli, he has some of the most unique hair that you will ever see in any form of motorsports. He has very, almost like a Romain Grosjean kind of hairdo. So very, very out there, but he will be sorely missed. So, okay, so that being said, hopefully we're now done with the tragedy and the tragic news for the week. We did have news come across for the World Endurance Championship some weeks ago that Toyota is going to launch a 2012 LMP1 hybrid into the championship. This coming a bit sooner than what we originally thought we were going to hear from the Toyota team. They had made no bones about it that they were going to get back into the sport. They had even produced engines for some of the teams. And now news has come out that they are going to participate in a limited kind of season program, but it's going to be a Toyota car, and it's going to be built and designed by Toyota Motorsport TMG, located in Cologne, Germany, and that is actually where the old Formula One team used to be housed.
Yeah.
So they're finally getting use out of their old F1 den, if you will, the Bat Cave.
Yeah.
But the car looks pretty nice. I think it's going to be interesting to see how the petrol hybrid stands up to the turbo diesels. But from what I'm hearing and reading, the LMP1 rules are going to be a little bit more balanced next year, or so they say.
Yeah, well, Audi's in a bit of an uproar about that, because they They are not happy about the gas engines being balanced as much as they are. They're arguing that they'll make this change and it'll make the gas engines balance right away, and then the gas engines will continue to develop while the turbo diesels, which are basically have been developed as much as they can, will not benefit from said development and will just get slower compared to the gas engines, which have been artificially propped up. They're not too happy about it, and you can understand. They've had a good thing going for several years. Last thing they want is that to be taken away.
Well, if Toyota's MO is on any level what it was before when they were in Formula One, It's not really going to matter. but that being said,
it will matter because somebody's got to pay all those paychecks, you know.
Yeah, true.
But I mean, Toto we're talking about here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the fact of the matter is this, though. The amount of money that Audi and Peugeot put into the sport, which even if they say is on a limited basis or a limited budget, still far exceeds the money put in by some of the teams that have been running, like the Orecas, and some of the smaller outfits. I mean, at the end of the day, Audi, if they feel their dominance is going to be challenged in sports car, will invest in whatever they have to do to win at sports car, just as Toyota will. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's going to be tough for Toyota, regardless of the rule changes, to come in and beat people like Audi and Peugeot, who, even if they have to make changes to their current formula, there's nobody better in the business to do that. I mean, if you want anybody changing over anything on your car, you know, on the fly, it's going to be the think tanks that are Audi and Peugeot, because they've shown that they're willing to push the limits of engineering to just beat each other, let alone a new kid on the block. So it will be interesting to see how that goes out. And interesting to note, this is the first time that Toyota's been in Le Mans as actually a car since they ran the GT1 in 99. So if you remember that little gem that's been on pretty much every Gran Turismo and Forza Motorsport game, that car was an interesting bit, and it was quite fast. So shall be interesting to see what happens. I think, anyways, that the news of Toyota coming in 2012 is great news, because I think that as far as the International Endurance Championship or the World Endurance Championship, as they call it, is really shaping up to be not bad. You've got Audi, Peugeot, Aston, Toyota. I mean, you're getting a nice little mixture of LMP cars in there. Now, granted, you know, we'll see how long that lasts, but I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it's a lot better than what we have been seeing here recently. And if that means that we have to push some of our guys in the American Le Mans series to go to the World Endurance Championship, then I would rather have a World Endurance Championship than an American Le Mans series, because we're not going to have any cars in the American Le Mans series, as was shown this year and a couple of years previous. You know, we don't have a very robust LMP count to begin with. I think we have the Level 5 boys when they want to compete. Sometimes the Astons, obviously with the Audis and Peugeots at Petit and Sebring for the World Endurance Championship. But outside of that, I mean, places like Long Beach and Mid-Ohio, it was slim pickings. You got the Muscle Milk Aston, and you had the beefed up Mazda LMP2 cars that were actually beefed up to the LMP1 specs. So, you know what? I'm all for just bringing all the cars together in a World Endurance Championship and having them travel. Now, whether that's monetarily feasible or not is another thing, but I'd rather see an international championship where they only come here twice a year than watch a watered-down, really shitty version of American Le Mans series, where the only thing that we've really been watching anyways is the GT class and the LMP challenge and the GT challenge, because there's some phenomenal talents in this challenge series. Say what you will about mixing those cars on the track at the same time with everybody, because it gets kind of crowded, but I'm telling you, there's some really good talents in both the LMP Challenge and, more specifically, the GT Challenge has got some fantastic drivers in there driving some cars. So, you know, I almost think I'm almost of the opinion, and I am by no means a sports car professional, so if Dex or any of the Midweek Motorsports or Radio Le Mans guys are listening, crucify me if you must. But I would almost be willing to turn the American Le Mans series into specifically either just strictly a GT challenge or having it as a feeder series going forward for the World Endurance Championship, where you have LMP Challenge and GT Challenge cars competing on the track every weekend, and then they go forth and the drivers graduate into these World Endurance Championship cars.
Well, that would be interesting to see. I mean, right now the American Le Mans series clearly is hurting, and a lot of these new prototypes that are being announced, they're going straight to the WEC. They are not going to be, you know, running full-time in the American Le Mans series. So
yeah. And I think if you look at things like Rally, if you look at things like Formula One, well, to a lesser extent here in the States, but if you look at Rally, especially around the world, you know, there's the World Championships, the WRC, the IRC, that are big world stage championships, and every country has a small little Le Mans, or feeder-esque series that feeds drivers into the overall championship for the WRC, the IRC. And I think that for the American Le Mans series, that would be something that we could do here. I mean, get rid of the prototypes or just keep the GTs. Hell, I don't know. But, you know, just make it to where the American Le Mans series is no longer like, you know, where you have big LMP cars playing, because let's face it, you're not going to have the car count you need. So turn it into a feeder series of sorts, while keeping maybe the GTs or something like that around, and then, you know, take your American talent or take the talent that races in the American Le Mans series and thrust it to the World Endurance Championship where all these prototypes are being announced. So I don't know. Just a thought, and I know it could make absolutely no sense, and I'm sure I'll be told by said people who listen to the show that I'm a friggin' idiot, but whatever. I just think it is a lot better to have the challenge cars out there than it is to pretend like you're trying to run a respectable championship with two teams in the LMP class.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a joke. You say what you will, it's a joke. And I love the Mazda boys to death, but who? I mean, you know, it's them versus Aston... You know, or the Aston Lola. So, you know, it is what it is. Let's see. But that's all we have for the other motorsports news. Let's go ahead and break down into Rally. The WRC2 video game was announced. I never got my free copy. I asked if I could get a copy to write a review before the game was launched. Never got a copy. Nobody ever got back to me. It's probably because the game sucks anyways, like the first one did. If you want a real rally game, just go get Codemasters Dirt. That's about as real as you're gonna get for modern stuff. Or if you're a real hardcore stalwart like myself, go get Richard Burns Rally for your PC. So
nice.
They're still upgrading. They're still upgrading talent, or not talent. Still upgrading content rather, and cars and builds and everything to keep it interesting. And it is probably the best rally simulation out there. So if you want it, go get it. But I wouldn't waste my time with the WRC 2 game, because if I remember what happened on the first game, it was a joke. So,
yeah.
And I've yet to see it here in stores. So I will actually just play Doug's Gran Turismo 5 rally if I really want to drive, or I'll just get on Dirt 3 and race my 2011 WRC cars I have on there, because I have the Fiesta, I have the Mini, I don't need the Citroen necessarily.
They need DLC for the black and silver livery.
Ooh, that would be sweet. You know what? I haven't put the game in, and I haven't tried. I'll have to see if they ever did that, or I'll recommend it to Codemasters. It's simple. It's just a little paint job. You could easily load that. Okay, and I'm also asking, I've been playing Forza 4 as well with a number of people. Remember, if you want to join the OpenPaddock.net Forza 4 car club on Forza, or I already said on Forza, but if you want to join the OpenPaddock.net car club on Forza Motorsports 4, please get in touch with me. My email is under the staff section, or you can find me on Twitter at Sean Paddock with your Xbox Live name, and I will add you to our car club. We actually had one guy, one of our usual listeners, whom names escapes me. He's going to be so mad. But we had him create a some cars and put them in our garage, and then he actually took a crack at the open paddock paint scheme.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so I mean, he's in the club. He's putting down, you know, paint schemes and shit. I was like, wow, dude, that's really cool. Because we don't, I surely will not be trying to paint a car. I got the game just so I could drive it and interact with my friends and everything. But you know, for sure, if you want to paint a car, by all means, you know, please do so. You know, it was fantastic. It was really a fantastic looking first attempt. I hope that he does more with it. And yeah, so it was really cool. He did it on a Ford Focus too, so he knew. He knows me. He must listen to the show because he put it on a Focus, and that was all she wrote. So it was actually funny too, as well, because it was our friend Nick. I'm sorry, Jesus. It was at Air Nick V. He did that for us. He knows that we're a Focus driven group, but he was really cool to do that. And also, it was really weird because Doug had to take his Focus into the shop, and he's been driving it a little too aggressively on the gravel. Mm-mm. He's actually blown his suspension out. He needs new coils.
No.
Yeah. So that's, and I'm telling you, I also took to the Patterson Ranch stage the other day in full anger, traction control off, kicking the thing sideways, having a great time on the gravel, only to find out that I actually blew a piece of plastic shrouding off of the underside of my car. So needless to say, Sean will be taking it a little more easy on the Patterson stage until at least he applies to buy his car, because Sean does not own his car. So... Yes, interesting. All right, but enough of our half attempts at trying to be rally drivers. We had real rally drivers in action this weekend for the WRC and Rally Spain, the RAC Rally Spain. Both Sebastian Loeb and Mikko Hirvonen went into this weekend's rally tied for championship points at 196 points apiece, with Sebastian Ogier trailing just 3 points behind them. And it was a very interesting rally weekend. So stage one, we've seen the loss of Petter Solberg immediately after clipping a large rock or sewage system. Blew the wheel off of his car. That was all she wrote. Then Kim Block did the same thing. That was all she wrote. So, right. Yeah. Surprise. But one of the things that happened on day one was it was the gravel slash tarmac stages. Little bits of tarmac mixed in with lots of bit of gravel. And the really dry air and temperatures in Spain saw to it that dust became an issue. If you've watched the Ford Rally Spain review on the homepage, you will see some of what they were talking about. And even if you're not, go ahead, take a look at the video. You'll see just some of the kinds of conditions they were having to work in. Sebastian Loeb, first on road, we obviously thought he was going to drift way to the back, being first on road with sweeping the gravel. But this time it actually worked to his advantage. Damn the luck. Because he was not having to deal with the just ridiculous levels of dust that he was kicking up behind. And it only got progressively worse as you work through the running order. The video, the Ford video, actually shows Mikko Hirvonen, I think, on stage 3 or 4, following behind Loeb's car. And it was, you could not see. It was the in-car camera, and you could not see in front of you. And he actually did clip something, kind of had a moment and went off stage. Got right back on, though. Just a short moment, but lost time, no doubt. And, I mean, you just could not see anything. It was awful. So during the second run of the stages in that afternoon, though, it got a little bit better because there was a bit of a breeze. The stages had already been kind of run one time. So the breeze was moving some of the dust aside. They staggered the cars. Instead of 3 minutes, they moved them back to 4 minutes between cars. And that worked a little bit better. But then at night for the stage six, which is run in near complete darkness, they had no breeze whatsoever, and the dust came back and was a problem again. And every driver who came through the end of stage interview just said how stupid it was to be driving. How stupid it was to be driving that stage at night, because you got to understand, you know, a rally car at night attaches those massive light pods on the front of their car so they can see absolutely everything. Now, basically, the only way I can break it down for you is imagine driving your car through the big, thick fog and turning your brights on. You can't see anything. And that's exactly what happened to the rally cars in the gravel because of all the dust. The light pods were so bright, they couldn't see the stage in front of them. I think it was Matthew Wilson or one of the mini boys. Completely none of those above. It was Mads Osberg came through the stage, and he said, I couldn't see anything. He said, I was bouncing off of rocks. I was bouncing off of walls. He was like, I couldn't see a damn thing. It was just the conditions were just awful for that stage. And Jari Matti Latvala, who was leading the rally going into that stage by 16 seconds, had a moment where he spun, collected also a puncture on the front wheel, and lost all that time and dropped about 30 seconds on day one to Loeb. So heading into tarmac stages, Sebastian Loeb has a 30-second lead. That means that Sebastian Loeb doesn't lose unless something freak happens. Now, heading into day two, one of the interesting things that came out of day two was the fact that Jari Matti Latvala – now, try to wrap your head around this. I know it's going to be hard. But Jari Matti Latvala actually beat Sebastian Loeb on tarmac during day two.
Ooh.
He actually took time off of Sebastian Loeb's lead. Now, granted, Sebastian Loeb was probably not pressing 100%, but even Sebastian Loeb said that Jari Matti Latvala's tarmac pace was freakish in Spain. Like, he was dialed in. And that's a very scary thing for next year's championship, because he actually took about 5-6 seconds off of Sebastian Loeb's time. He went from like 32 seconds or something like that and brought it down to 27 seconds after day two. So part of it was Sebastian Loeb maintaining the gap and doing a good job maintaining the gap. Another part of it, though, is when Sebastian Loeb comes out and says that you just put on a freakish clinic on how fast you were driving in the tarmac, that is something you can hang your hat on. So, very great job. Very good job for Jari Matti. And it shows that the Ford cars actually do have pace on tarmac, which is something that we're not used to seeing with the Focus. The Focus was not competitive on sealed surfaces, whereas it seems, anyways, at the moment, that the Fiesta is and will be, for years to come, a much better tarmac car than the Focus. So we'll see what happens. Heading into day three, however, it was still Sebastian Loeb. And then all hell broke loose for Sebastian Ogier. Sebastian Ogier was told this weekend he was going to be directly supporting Sebastian Loeb's championship aspirations, decided that he knew better and that he was going to push for the championship. That cost him dearly because I don't know what happened. He did suffer some punctures and drop a lot of time and fell well back into the clutches of the minis. But he eventually would retire on day three for some unspecified engine issue, a.k.a. Olivier Canel pushed the the rogue kill switch. So,
oh, man.
You see what happens when you try to screw with a seven-time champion? Olivier Canel, like I said, Petter Solberg's gone rogue, push the button. Beep. And then Petter Solberg's engine exploded. Go figure. And the same thing has seemed to have happened to Mr. Ogier. He got a little got a little big britches there. And he ended up not failing to finish the rally and securing no points, all but ensuring that he will be playing title spoiler in Rally GB. So don't mess with Olivier Canel. He's like the mafia. So heading into day three, though, it was all going to be Sebastian Loeb. He would take the win, leading right up to the end, right before the power stage. Jari Matti Latvala showed up well early to a timing point and was docked a two-minute penalty. I wonder why. That promoted Mikko Hirvonen to second. So obviously the team orders came out there. And he was able to finish second. Third, Jari Matti Latvala. Fourth was Danny Sordo and the Mini Boys looking good again. And this time they had Chris Meek in fifth. So a fantastic showing for the Mini Pro Drive outfit again. And on top of it, they won the power stage. Both Minis took top honors in the power stage. So first ever WRC points for Chris Meek. First ever power stage win for the Minis, obviously. And it all fell down to the fact that they opted for a soft tire, which helped out the Minis immensely on that stage, because they had actually some pretty decent rain come down right before they went and took to the power stage. Nobody could change to the wet tire. And so many cars went ahead of the Minis and the championship leaders that they kind of cleared like a miniature dry line, if you will. And the soft tires worked a lot better in the damp, cool conditions, a lot better than the dry, hard compound did. And so the Minis actually at one point, I think it was Mads Dosberg who was standing atop the power stage. He was on top of the power stage at the moment. And of course, if you ever go to YouTube, you can watch the power stages. Don't tell anybody I told you that, because I don't want North One Sports to shut it down. But you can go there and watch. Usually in four parts, they have the power stage, and you can watch it as it is ESPN coverage. And Osberg's standing there, and they're showing the camera shine on him, and everybody's like, oh, that was such a good time. And then all of a sudden, here comes Chris Meek through the power stage. And at the first split, he was 8.1 seconds faster than Osberg was. He was absolutely on a flyer. And Sordo was right behind him, only a couple seconds, really. I think he was like 0.2 seconds slower at the end of the stage than was Meek. So, and then Loeb set the fastest time for P3. So that being what it is, Loeb now carries an 8-point margin into Rally GB, Ford, Abu Dhabi Ford's stomping grounds, the M Sport stomping grounds out there in Wales. They're going to it's final rally of the season, and it's a gravel rally, which is plus one for Ford, but 8 points is kind of a big margin. So Hirvonen is going to have to be perfect, and Jari Matti Latvala is going to have to be perfect. And they're going to have to hope that the Minis play spoiler, and that, you know, Loeb is not able to finish. I think Hirvonen has to win, and at that point he would have to have Loeb finish fourth to win the title. So it would have to be fourth, because, well, no, I'm sorry. Hirvonen could finish first, and Loeb could finish third, but Hirvonen would have to win the power stage, and Loeb would not be able to score any points out of the power stage, because even if he scored 1 point in the power stage, that means that he would tie if math's right, which is probably not, but he would probably tie Hirvonen at that point and would win because of rally victories. So, Ford Europe and Gerard Quinn have said that this is like when we see a Penske-Ganassi title fight in IndyCar. They are going to dump massive resources into this car heading into Rally GB to not only end the season on a good note for Ford, but also give their driver the best possible chance to knock off Sebastian Loeb from that perch that he's been on for, 7 years. So it's going to be a
And
tough.
not going anywhere anytime soon.
No. So it's going to be a tough fight, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. So it's all to play for. Anybody can win the title, but it's going to be a chore.
As long as your name is Loeb, it's all to play for.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah. So that's all we have for the Rally Universe. Oh, wait. I'm an idiot. Juho Hänninen won the SWRC championship this weekend.
Oh, there you go.
So I was happy. So Hänninen, champion in the SWRC, as he took the victory in Spain over Ott Tanak, who was well off because of some issues, but he was his closest championship rival. Nasser Al-Attiyah finished second, so in that rally. So Juho Hänninen goes and wins the IRC title last year, wins the SWRC title this year, and I'm not so certain that he's not out of the IRC title this year. So there was a article today I seen on Twitter. I didn't bother to click it, but it said that he would relish the opportunity to win the SWRC. So yeah, so it says here that he would relish the opportunity to defend his IRC crown in Cyprus next month, and he actually has a chance to win. So Juho Hänninen could take the double if he could beat Jan Kopecky in Cyprus in a month's time. Actually, 9 days' time, rather, not a month's time, 9 days' time until Cyprus rally. I think that maybe they will let him participate, maybe. But I don't think they'll let, as I've said all year, I don't think they'll let him beat Kopechki. They want Kopechki to win the title. They want a Czech driver winning in the Czech car. So we'll see what happens. But I sure would like to see Juho Hänninen drive in the IRC finale, and I'd like to see him win the IRC title and the SWRC title at the same time. That would be awesome. So you would have to detect a fanboy head explosion just outside of Kansas City. And that would be me. So, all right. Well, enough babbling about rally. Let's get into Formula One. And like we talked about earlier, we had the Korean Grand Prix a couple weeks ago. What a god awful track that is. What an awful track.
You know what? They made mention of it during the broadcast, but before they did, I saw the qualifying, and I thought the same thing. I thought basically that they, it was a construction site last year. After the race last year, they joked that they just shut the doors and didn't come back until this year,
Wouldn't
and
surprise me.
it looked like it. I mean, we're used to seeing these world-class Formula One tracks with nice landscaping all around and everything, and this track, while the track is complete, all of the green space would look like scrub brush. It just looked like it was undone. It looked like people were walking on wet gravel paths to get to seating areas and everything like that. And speaking of that, seats weren't very full.
No, I noted that during the race. I told that to Doug because we were watching it that following Sunday morning. I said, "Wow, Doug." I was like, "Look at the stands. They're bone dry." So there
Now,
was.
as far as results, let's not really worry too much about it, other than Sebastian Vettel won, thus securing himself a constructors' championship for the team, because Mark Webber can't quite get up to the front of the pack.
He had a better start this time, though.
Yeah, he
Uh,
did.
he had
He did.
he had been plagued by terrible starts. But you're right. He's just missing something this year, and I think that last year may have been his best opportunity at winning the drivers'
Yeah,
championship.
certainly.
And I don't think it's going to happen. I think he's already resigned to his fate. I think he's already told the Red Bull boys that he doesn't think he can win the title next year either. So, and I mean, can you really blame him? Have you seen how fast Sebastian Vettel's been?
Yeah,
I mean,
there's no catching him.
no,
None whatsoever. There is no catching him.
he devastated the McLarens this weekend, or not this
No.
weekend, but in Korea. I mean, he was just tick for tack. They set fast lap, he set fast lap. So, I mean, Vettel has got the McLarens covered, and the Ferraris for that matter. Which, by the way, fantastic. There was some fantastic racing going on not obviously first or second place, but like third, fourth, and fifth place, if I remember right. There's some great racing going on there. And oh, yeah, it was also a terrible weekend because Vitaly Petrov obliterated my boy. Did you see him completely spear the living hell out of Michael Schumacher going into that hairpin?
Yeah, indeed.
He obliterated him. I was like, "Holy crap, man! What were you trying to do there?" But he took proper responsibility, and Schumacher wasn't upset about it, obviously. But I was kind of bummed about that. So because Schumacher was having a pretty good race, he actually, if I remember right, he actually led laps
Yeah.
at one point, which was the first time that he had led laps since like Japan of 2006 when he quit. So.
Yeah, don't get too comfy, Mike.
Hey, now.
Well, you know.
He's coming back next year, so I think if that team, one of the problems that they're having is they need to do something that's cutting edge, like they did in 07, was it? Or I'm sorry, 09. They need to do something cutting edge like they did in 09 because that's how they won. They came up, they played catch up all year in car development this year, trying to fix problems that the Mercedes, what do they call the WP02 or something like that, whatever that car is, it had problems from the get-go, and they were constantly spending money trying to fix that problem, and every time they went to fix a problem with the car, they're losing one step to the front runners. Now, I do think the Mercedes car really came to life here during the second part of the championship. Obviously, well too late and not going to be challenging for race wins. But I think that if they can get ahead next year, if they can actually do something like they're talking about a front mounted blown diffuser, some
Yeah,
you're
it's
talking
like
about
a
something crazy.
basically an F duct for the front
Yeah,
wing.
that is F duct for the front wing. I mean, if they can come up with an F duct for the front wing and that be cutting edge and that give them an advantage, they just need to do a proper job developing the car. I think they took shortcuts last year. The car looked impressive. I thought it was going to be a championship contender. I thought that they were going to be a race winning contenders, to be honest with you, at the beginning of the year. The car looked sharp, but it did not perform well because it had design flaws because they cut corners. I think that if Mercedes takes their time, properly develops the car, works out the bugs, and comes up with one of those cutting edge things like a front wing F duct, then next year could be the year for them to start challenging for podiums and potentially wins in the second half of the season.
Well, you got to remember, though, Ferrari has said that they're doing something that's completely different and they're going to be radical with their design. So, everybody says the same
Yeah,
things.
we'll see.
But, it's obviously going to be interesting to watch as the cars develop for next year because, by and large, the technical package for next year, the big change is the blown aero is being outlawed to some extent.
No blown diffusers.
So, will be fun.
Which raises the questions. Why is like the likes of Mercedes GP? I mean, granted, the titles are over, and you're obviously not going to win a race this year,
So
unless
why are you
something,
developing this car?
which is like, unless something cataclysmically goes wrong at the front of the grid, why not start running the car without a blown diffuser on the back?
It is the FIA, I mean.
Well, I mean, the FIA is not going to say, no, you can't run a blown diffuser.
Yeah, you're right. You're
But I
right.
mean, you have to run a blown diffuser. I mean, you don't have to do anything as long as it's within the technical regulations. If I'm Ross Brawn, if I'm Mercedes, if I'm anybody really, Ferrari as well.
Get that data. Supposedly Ferrari's been running some test parts on the car, and Red Bull has started to talk that they are too. So, oh, everybody's getting ready for the off season.
I mean, even if you're gonna try to have Moss or Alonso finish second at the driver's title, take the diffuser off of Phil's car. Moss
Yeah.
doesn't need a diffuser. He ain't gonna be winning a race, sadly. Take the diffuser off his car. Start drawing that technical data. You don't have time in the off season to draw technical data in an actual race scenario. This, if I'm Ross Brawn, I'm saying get that damn diffuser off the back of the car and start collecting data. I want antennae hanging all over this car, picking up every little, breath it takes with the diffuser off the back of it, and maybe give me an upper hand heading into next year on how the car will run without a blown diffuser. Just me? I don't know. Maybe making too much sense. Maybe I'm talking on my ass. I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, if I'm Ross Brawn or anybody really who doesn't have a dog in the fight, I'm taking the diffuser off the car.
Well, speaking of changes for next year, one change that Korea hopes to make is to renegotiate with Bernie because they got a bad deal.
Mm.
And we all know how easy it is to renegotiate deals with Bernie.
We also know how easy it is to get a bad deal.
Yeah. The cost of this year's race stood at 52 million pounds. That includes a $35 million sanctioning fee.
Good Lord. Okay. There's no way they even came close to making that kind of money.
Yeah, they basically said that they can make they could make 16 million pounds on tickets. Whatever the case, we all know, just looking at that event, it's the second year of the event. The track wasn't even finished last year.
Yep.
This year, it's like they just and they joked about it on the
broadcast
in the States. They said some of the teams went into the garages, they opened up the refrigerator in the garage, and there was food in there from last year.
Oh my God. That's stanky. That is stanky.
There was food in there from last year. We think it was food in there from last year. It looked up and said, please shut the door.
Right. We're still hibernating. Battle's like, look, my chicken curry from last year. I shall name it Oscar. Oh my God.
Oh,
disgusting. Geez. What the hell's wrong with the Koreans?
Well, you know, there was some talk that there are several real estate deals that were going along with this track that kind of fell through. Mm-hmm. Because if you recall, their initial design was around a city being built around the track.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw no indication this year that that was even close to happening.
It's empty.
Yeah. It's a bad sign when the second year of your race, you're putting up billboards in the stands.
Made with China.
Made with Korea.
Yeah, made with
Samsung.
Yeah, right. Made with Seoul.
Made to look like your iPhone.
Nice. There you go. I'm surprised we didn't see any StarCraft 2 banners out there.
Nice.
The Koreans are hard up on their StarCraft. I figured we would have seen something.
Maybe they would have sold, you know, two or three times more tickets if they just said it was a giant StarCraft tournament.
Nice. Right, giant StarCraft tournament. Everybody shows up. What the hell? What is this? This does not look like StarCraft. Yeah, bad news for Korea.
Yeah, it is a bad news, and it's even worse when you're saying, well, we need to renegotiate with Bernie. Yeah, you might as well just leave that off your mind. Yeah. I mean,
just get sued by him. It might actually be cheaper in the long run.
Bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Just have the entire country go bankrupt. It's your only protection from Bernie.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. There's been some talk. Teams are being told that there are going to be extremely strict limitations on engine mapping for next year. This year, engine maps are allowed to be all over the place. They're allowed to be rather exotic. But the FIA has told the teams that it will be a feature of the ECU next year.
Oh, nice.
That you will not be allowed to do the extreme engine maps. So, with that in mind, don't try and design an engine that's clever that requires that engine map. Because recall, that was what they said, the reason they said they couldn't take away the blown aero was because these engines, you know, they just rely on this funky little off-throttle stuff to make things work, so we can't take it away. Whatever.
So what you're saying is the cars are not going to sound like Browning 50 caliber machine guns next year. Nice. In the middle of a corner, and you're like, what the hell? Like, Doug looked over, he's like, that engine doesn't sound like it's on song. I was like, that's because of the engine mapping. I was like, it makes it sound like crap.
It's like the battle days of traction control, man.
Yeah, right.
Corners, and you just hear them, you know, they just put the foot way down, and the car, we'll just sit there and gurgle and bubble and spit until it has traction.
Yeah, right. I remember that because they always said that the only thing you had to do in Formula One was just keep your foot in the throttle, and traction control would take care of the rest. That was damn near what we were seeing this year. Yeah. I mean, you let off the throttle through the corners, and the engine is still running at 90% throttle, pushing exhaust gas out the back to keep the downforce, you know, going. Yeah. And the cars just sounded awful, I thought. I mean, some of them, especially like the McLaren, you know, was obviously a rocket. That Mercedes engine and the McLaren package was a rocket compared to the rest of the field, minus Red Bull. But the car sounded awful when it went through the corners. You're always just thinking, is that car supposed to sound like that, or is it one step away from taking a couple ammo? But it was actually just the engine mapping. It was not the engine itself.
It was actually just the engine mapping, and if any car was going to go Kablamo, it would be the Renault.
Yeah, exactly. But not the Red Bull Renault, the Renault.
the very clever Renault with the forward-facing exhaust so they could shoot their opponents.
Yeah, well, other news, speaking about the engine mappings and these exhausts and everything, Ross Braun, the guy in charge at Mercedes, who we've given much talk about, has said that the attempt at taking out these blown diffusers next year, he doesn't think they're going far enough. He's thinking right now that while the spirit of the rules says one thing, that teams will find a way to, get around those. So saying that, it's going to be, the technical working group, and all of that. He's afraid that people are going to find ways to manipulate the always present loopholes in the FIA's rule books, whether it be technical regulations or sporting code. Teams always find a way to manipulate those, much like Mr. Braun did when he exactly. won the championship.
Is this a replay of that same year? Because, He went to them and said, you haven't completely gotten rid of the double-decker diffuser. There are loopholes in this rule that you've written. Oh, no, you don't know what you're talking about, Ross. Okay, whatever.
So I obliterate your championship.
Exactly. I won the championship in a Braun GP car that was painted white and lemon slice.
Right? And I literally didn't have the team put together and the car put together until 2 weeks before the season.
Oh, jeez.
And I came out crazy. And made a mockery of the team, of McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari.
So if there's anybody out there threatening, saying the rules are not tight and concise, you probably want to listen to at least this cat.
Yeah, because if those loopholes are not closed, please believe that Ross Braun will be the man that will exploit those and say, hey, I tried to tell you that you didn't close the loophole. I'm in no way, but shape, or
no,
form.
No, you didn't listen to me, did you?
You didn't listen to seven times champion, technical director at Ferrari. You don't listen to me. You just go on and do whatever it is you want to do, and I will just pick you apart and eat your championship for breakfast. And you know what? To be honest with you, considering that my boy drives one of his cars, I hope they don't close the loopholes, and I hope he does go against the spirit of the rules and crushes everybody. So.
This time it's red herring. He wants them spending all the time on that section of the rule book so that he can exploit the other section of the rule book that he knows is going to be phenomenal for his car.
The front F duct.
the levitation sensors in the front.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway.
Well,
so
moving on.
Moving on, indeed.
If you're listening to this, that probably means that there's been a new Formula One United States Grand Prix added to the calendar for 2013.
Oh, my.
It appears as though Bernie Ecclestone's once thought of as a pipe dream race to run in New Jersey with the Manhattan skyline in the backdrop. Once thought to be a pipe dream, now appears as though it is going to happen. There are sources within this situation that are saying that it is going to be announced Tuesday, with Speed TV even going as far as to say that they will interrupt regularly scheduled programming to bring the news of this second United States Grand Prix. if and when it happens on Speed TV. So it says an article actually from Autosport here says that the Wall Street Journal reported on Saturday that a press conference has been scheduled at Port Imperial in Weehawken, which I guess is in New Jersey, for next Tuesday, where an announcement could be made, and that would have a Formula One race and on the New Jersey road course with the Hudson River as a backdrop and the iconic Manhattan skyline.
Pretty impressive if Bernie is able to pull this one off. And I'll be interested to see the details, because I'm of the opinion that Bernie's almost going to have to pay somebody to get that event, not the other way around. So we shall see.
Yeah, we should. Hey, I'm all about, if I'm telling you right now, if there's a Formula One race in New Jersey in 2013, I'm going. I am committing right now for twofold. One, I'm going to go to Austin next year after much deliberation. If I'm in the country, I will be going to Austin.
Sweet.
And I will actually skip IndyCar races if I have to, reluctantly, to go, because I really want to see Formula One. I won't skip the 500, but I will go to Austin. If that is the case, 2013, I will be going, because I love to see a road course event in New Jersey with Formula One. I'll go to both races that year, to be honest with you. And I've always wanted to go to New York City. I've never been to New York City. I really want to go really bad to Manhattan and do tourist things there and see the Statue of Liberty and all that fun stuff. So if that's the case and Formula One does race in New Jersey in 2013, I'm going to go ahead and book my hotel, and sweet. I invite everybody to come along, because that will actually be probably a 2-week vacation, because it sounds like it's going to be run about the same time as Canada. So I don't know exactly. I don't think I'll go to Canada, but I might take, I don't know what IndyCar races are happening then either, to be honest with you. So
Just have to play that one by ear, because IndyCar may run themselves into non-existence by then.
That could be as well. Those could be the only open-wheel races that are available in the country come 2013. But we'll see what happens. I'm sure that at least the Indy 500 will be about, but we'll see what happens for sure. If this announcement has happened and we have not known about it yet, and you're listening to it, and it has happened, please believe my hotel will be booked, and I invite everybody to join me. It will be a open paddock, drunken good time, as we always have at all the races, and it will be in New York City, so I'll be in rare form. So, Mike, you should.
That sounds dangerous.
It could be dangerous. I may need another member of the paddock to come with us.
I would say to Austin. Maybe. To New Jersey? No.
Why? You're closer to New Jersey than you are Austin.
No, I'm closer to Austin.
Are you really?
I just don't care for New York.
No. I've never been. I really want to go.
Eh. Just not my thing. Too big of a city for me. Anyway.
Oh, truth.
Anyway. So, we've got something coming up this weekend.
The Indian Grand Prix.
As long as the entire paddock can get through customs, because it sounds like India is making it as difficult as possible to get journalists and team equipment into the country.
Not a good way to kick off your relationship with Mr. Ecclestone.
Yeah, don't make a mistake there. Bernie's going to end up charging you for any inconvenience you cause his roving circus.
And I know that we have a lot of, actually, this site actually has a lot of Indian readers. I don't know how, but we do. And I will say this to our Indian constituents. Fix this or the troll will end you. I don't care how big of a superpower you think you are. You ain't seen nothing. Bernie Ecclestone will rip you a new a-hole. So fix this, please. So, because I want to see this event succeed. I think that of all the really shit places that Bernie has decided to plan a GP, I think that India is probably one of the best ideas he's had. And I think that being the kind of, you know, the economy being what it is in India and everything, I think that this is a good move, and I want to see this race succeed. And I think the track looks kind of cool too. But you need to do this right. Don't screw this up, because Bernie will end your life and eat your soul. Count on it. We speak from experience here at the paddock, because we had a U.S. Grand Prix at Indianapolis, and we obviously didn't do something right, and he ended us. So, you know, yeah. As a whole country, it's taken us years to get a race back. So
I can just see how it's going to go in the Korean renegotiations. Mr. Ecclestone, please, can we? Shut up.
Shut up, Korea. Fix problem. Build city now. Which yeah. I'm surprised that Bernie Ecclestone hasn't stepped in and said, I will just build a Bernie Ecclestone city around your track to keep it afloat.
Every building will have my face on it.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, it will annex itself from Korea and will be Bernie's own country.
The gargoyles at the top of the columns. What? It's Bernie.
Well, I mean, he already has a nose that looks kind of like a gargoyle nose, so it's not that far off.
Well.
And he's about as old as stone, so... I think
dirt.
Dirt, stone, dirt used to make stone. So, well, the track looks okay. It looks like we're going to have, I think they said that we're going to have two DRS zones in this in this track. So that'll be interesting to play out. But it's really not going to matter because I'm going I'm a bit more reluctant this time. But I think everybody in the world has Vettel for the win. I'm a bit reluctant,
though. I have
though.
Vettel. You have Vettel. Everybody in the world has Vettel. I think the only person who doesn't have Vettel is Lewis Hamilton.
That's really funny. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I know we get such a hard time. People really don't like us making fun of Lewis Hamilton, and I'm really sorry. I don't want to make fun of him, but I think it's funny. He's a character. He is a character of Formula One, and I love to hate him, but I honestly would be lost if Lewis Hamilton was not in Formula One, to be honest with you. So
it's kind of like how we're lost without Max Mosley at the FIA.
I know. The FIA is such a quiet place these days. It's almost not even fun.
Yeah, I tell you, it's like it used to be a stand-up act, and now it's like
really
polished straight, man. I mean, it's just hilarious how different these things are.
I mean, you see what happens. You have a guy in there that's all about being kinky and having fun in the basement of the FIA with crazy London maids and stuff, and you know that leaves, and it seems like with it leaves all of personality, and you bring in John Todt and you're like well, let's be all professional and realistic about this. It's almost not even fun. So I bet the FIA is a very boring place to work these days. So they truly miss Max Mosley. They just won't say it in public because he does bad things to hookers. So So Indian Grand Prix, Sebastian Vettel for the win. And with that being said, I think that's all we have. You have anything else for us this evening?
Nope.
All right. Well, on a sad note as well, just since we opened the show with bad news, we may as well close out the show with bad news. It was announced yesterday that Iron Man Mike Wanzer, as many people know, in the IndyCar community, a young boy, six-year-old boy, who was battling leukemia, finally passed on to the other side. You know, kind of knew it was coming. He was kind of going through a little bit of a suffering state there. He's finally succumbed to his leukemia. And interesting enough, it's just a couple weeks ago, both him and Dan Weldon had a picture taken together. And now they're reunited again reunited again, once again on the other side, doing great things, I'm sure. Dan and Senna and the boys are on track racing, and Mike's sitting in the luxury suite box cheering them on, having a great time. All the root beer and stuff I'm sure he can stomach. But I would like to say that tonight's edition of the podcast is dedicated in remembrance of Dan Weldon. And dedicated to his family that he's left behind. It's also dedicated to Iron Man Mike and his family and their terrible loss. Really hope that, you know, really tragic when a young man only 6 years of age, is taken well before his time, before the world truly gets to see his greatness. I mean, because if he was doing those kinds of things while he had cancer, just, you know, I mean, the sky was the limit for the kid. So taken way too soon, as always. And then also, we will dedicate it to Mr. Simoncelli and his memory as well. So I guess in dedication to everybody who we lost this week in the motorsport community, as it has been a very trying time for all of us. But we here at the paddock will continue on doing what we do, and you know, continue to bring you coverage into the foreseeable future. And hope that, you know, if anybody needs anything in the community as far as grieving and whatnot goes, I know my door is open at all times on the email and the Twitter. I'm sure Mike's is as well, and Doug too. So, you know, if you need somebody to share grieving with, please, you know, please don't hesitate to hit us up, and we'd be happy to help you through these times as well. So, but without further ado and without any kind of saved up rounds, I guess we'll go ahead and end the show then, Mike, right?
Yep.
All right. Everybody have a great week. Be safe. Keep your heads high, and we'll see you next week.